Welcome to Everything is Changing. In each episode, we focus on circular economy, ecosystem restoration, energy transformation, sustainable mobility, and water resources. I am Ahmetcan Uzlaşık. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. This is the season final of Everything is Changing, and my guest today is Sibel İlhan Okumuş, Policy and Communications Officer at the Renewable Hydrogen Coalition. She works closely on EU energy and climate policy, helping shape how renewable hydrogen fits into Europe's decarbonization plans. In this episode, we talk about what renewable hydrogen actually is, why it matters for Europe's climate and energy security, and what still needs to happen for the technology to scale. It's a clear and accessible introduction to a topic that's often discussed in expert circles, but rarely broken down for the public. Sibel İlhan Okumuş, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me.
Welcome to Everything is Changing. How are you? How is everything going?
I'm well. It's the end of the year, so my energy is slowly going down. How about you?
I'm a bit excited because it's the first time that I'm hosting an episode where my friend is the interviewee and she's also a podcaster. So I'm a bit excited.
Yeah, and it's my first time being the one that has been interviewed in a podcast. So I'm not the one in control. So I have a little bit of anxiety about it, but I trust you fully.
I can tell. Okay, let's start with you have been working at the Renewable Hydrogen Coalition for almost a year now, if I'm not mistaken.
7 months.
7 months. So, okay, today we are going to test your knowledge then.
Let's see.
Okay. So you guys at the Renewable Hydrogen Coalition had a summit earlier this month. Perhaps we should start with how did that go and what were your observations?
Yes. So indeed, last week on Thursday, on 4th of December, we held our fifth Renewable Hydrogen Summit, which is our flagship event. And I would say that from the feedback I also received, it went really well. We had a good coverage of both the industry and also policymakers. And there were lots of discussions from the future of the renewable hydrogen on the lead markets, the upcoming lead markets, shipping and aviation and infrastructure. Also, electrolyzers and funding were also part of the discussion. And we basically, with this one-day event, we covered almost everything, I would say, from A to Z, the whole value chain and the whole topic of renewable hydrogen. I think it went well. We also had the participation of the Commissioner Daniel Grenson, and we published a declaration. So our co-chairs had the opportunity to present this to the audience, but also to the Commissioner Jorgensen. And then this was followed by his sort of take and an answer to the declaration. And I think it was really nice because we can see that both the industry and the policymakers are on the same page. And the participation, I think it also shows that we really believe in this and we see renewable hydrogen as one of the solutions to our decarbonization goals.
Well, I love one-day events. Some events just go on for like forever, like 3 days, 4 days, 1 week. One day is very compact and I'm glad that you just like did this event and finished it all in just one day. Forgive my ignorance. I don't know much about hydrogen. So let's start with the basics, I would say. For listeners new to the topic, like me, what exactly is renewable hydrogen? Is it the same thing with green hydrogen? Because I don't know the difference. And why does it matter for us, for Europe?
All right. So hydrogen, and I'm sure everyone at least once heard about this color scheme, the whole from green to blue to gray to pink hydrogen. And we chose to say renewable hydrogen because what we mean with that is, so renewable hydrogen is produced by splitting water to hydrogen and oxygen using renewable electricity through a process called electrolysis. Mm. And we are making sure that we use the wording renewable hydrogen because you can basically do this process with electricity that is not necessarily renewable. But what we want to make sure that we use resources like wind and solar to produce renewable electricity and then use this renewable electricity to produce renewable hydrogen. And it is important because of mainly three main issues. And it is not necessarily in this order of importance. Maybe it's more like a personal preference to say it this way. But I would start with the first one. As a European Union, we have our decarbonization targets. We are aiming to reach net zero by 2050. And on the way, we also have targets for 2030, 2035, and 2040, which recently was agreed to. And an important point here is that to reach this target, to reach net zero, there are several pathways that we can use. But in terms of the energy policy, the most useful and beneficial and the most environmentally, how can I say, conscious way is to electrify whatever we can. And for those sectors that cannot be electrified, like shipping and aviation and some of the heavy industries like steelmaking, for instance, there we need to benefit from renewable hydrogen. So this is the first one. Second, energy security. So we are all aware that Europe is not rich in terms of fossil fuels, and maybe thank God for that. And since the Russian invasion to Ukraine, we have seen that this topic has become even more important. Energy security today is security, and we need to get rid of the fossil fuels that we are still using, which is still quite a big part of our energy consumption, if we more or less take the average in Europe. And again, as I said, if we electrify whatever we can electrify through renewable resources and have the rest in our hands, the sectors that I mentioned, to be able to gain 100% independence from countries like Russia, from undemocratic countries, we will need...
Or US with the LNG.
Yes, that's a whole another story indeed. And then, of course, I mean, today it is not clear which partners we can really rely on. So to be able to have our energy security and energy independence, renewable hydrogen really plays an important part. And the third one, of course, today is, this mandate, it's a very big topic. Industrial competitiveness. There are many sectors that Europe has lost its competitive edge, but renewable hydrogen and electrolyzers, this sector is still the one that Europe has the advantage, I would say, the competitive edge, because we are one of the few that is an innovator in this sector, that was the first one to define renewable hydrogen, to regulate and etc. And we need to still be able to keep this.
So you say that renewable hydrogen can actually save Europe in this insecure geopolitical environment.
Well, I wouldn't say that it can save us. I'm not sure if there is one technology that can save us from everything, but we have our clear goals. And if you want to achieve them, renewable hydrogen is a must for the sectors that I mentioned. I think this is an important part to mention because, there are different stakeholders, different actors that believe that we should or we could use hydrogen in different sectors that can easily be electrified. So maybe that's important to highlight as well.
Well, I got it. And if I got it, I think everyone got it because I'm not that smart. But let's move on with...
That's not fair. That's not fair.
Well, this year I personally, because I also live in Brussels, I personally saw many events across Europe happening on renewable hydrogen. So can we actually say that Europe is focusing strongly on renewable hydrogen right now?
That's a tricky question.
That's my job.
Yes, indeed. So what happened in the last couple of years, in the last 5-10 years, maybe the European Union launched a hydrogen strategy 5 years ago. And this was the time also again when we had this energy crisis. So we were looking desperately for solutions. And this actually presented a very good opportunity, a vision actually to emerge this new industrial value chain. And indeed with that, with this kind of... let's say enthusiasm, a lot of voices appear and a lot of opportunities also appear. And indeed, we can say that Europe focused on this. Europe gave importance to this topic because, as I said, it was the first time to define renewable hydrogen, what renewable hydrogen is, and to put the rules. And today what we see is that other countries that are also slowly advancing on renewable hydrogen, they are using or basically getting inspired by the rules put forward by the EU. So from the legislative side, I would say that yes, indeed. And Europe also, for the first time, introduced a funding tool, basically the European Hydrogen Bank, which was also, again, showing, and it is a standalone bank. So it is only focused on renewable hydrogen, but now it's changed a little bit, still with the focus on hydrogen. So I think these show that there is a focus and there is an importance given to this. But there is a but, and maybe do you want me to jump directly on that or do I take it later?
Please go on.
Yes. But today what we see is, so it is not enough only that we regulate it, we just make the rules that at the European level and then at the member states level, we don't really see those rules being not even implemented, but transposed. They are not even transposed.
Well, I was going to ask about the policy side since you're the policy officer at the coalition. But let me first ask this, because I'm really wondering, where does Europe stand today in terms of hydrogen production and infrastructure?
So today, I can give some numbers on our on Europe's electrolyzer capacity. So today, around 600 megawatts of electrolyzers are operational and 3 gigawatts are under construction.
Which means?
So let's compare with the hydrogen strategy. What the hydrogen strategy aimed is to have 6 gigawatts of electrolyzers installed by 2024. So we are not there, unfortunately. We are quite far, I would say. But this is mostly because the transposition or the implementation of the rules, the lack of demand. Again, this is quite a political topic. Lack of infrastructure, as you ask, and also the cost of renewable hydrogen. From our sector side, from the electrolyzer manufacturer's side, in just a few years, the capacity, the electrolyzer manufacturing capacity jumped from 1 gigawatt to 10 gigawatts. So it is already there. The industry is ready to deliver, actually. But it is not able to deliver because there are several projects that are either being cancelled or being postponed just because the infrastructure is not there, just because they cannot deliver their renewable hydrogen from their factory to the users, to the industry, or legislation, for instance. I think we might sometimes look at it as just like a rule book, but this also gives investors the certainty, the confidence to invest in certain technologies or act. But if you're not sure if these rules will be even taken into consideration or implemented, you would be a little bit hesitant. And this is the case in renewable hydrogen sector.
Mm-hmm.
And another part is the lack of demand. We have the technological edge, the innovation here, the capacity from the electrolyzer side, but we don't really see the demand taking off. And this is mostly due to the price of renewable hydrogen, the green premium, as we call, which is the price difference between renewable hydrogen and the fossil alternatives, which remains quite high.
If I'm a factory owner, I'm naturally going to choose the cheapest option available, even if I genuinely want to contribute to the EU's decarbonization efforts. That tension is understandable. So the question is, who supports companies in making the cleaner choice? Are public subsidies the answer, or is there a broader strategy to help businesses decarbonize?
So there is no one single answer to this, and there are many ways that we can try to overcome this. So to start with, public procurement plays an important role. With public procurement, we mean member states purchasing materials or goods in order to basically, give services or create infrastructure, etc. And in the EU, if I'm not mistaken, for instance, for the steel industry, I believe it was 40% that it was exchanged to public procurement. So this is a huge tool that we have in our hands that can lead the way, basically, that can be the example of all right, we have our targets, we have our decarbonization targets, we have our renewable hydrogen or renewable energy targets, basically. So what we can do is we are creating the demand by purchasing ourselves products made with, let's say, renewable hydrogen. And this is a very important tool because by doing this, the market itself will slowly close the price gap between renewable hydrogen and the fossil alternative. So this is the first, for instance. There are also other discussions because right now with the Industrial Accelerator Act upcoming, although postponed, with the lead markets now being discussed, what can we do? We can set, for instance, binding quotas, minimum quotas, both in public procurement, but also for private. Can create ways that, for instance, there were several reports published recently on how using renewable hydrogen made products, such as steel, we can use these products to make cars, let's say, or for instance, use it in buildings. What we see is that the price does not increase too much. It increases, of course, but when you think about it, cars are not only about the steel that they are being produced, or buildings that are not only about the steel that was used in it. There are other factors that define the price. And what we see as an opportunity is that we can use these sectors so the consumers pay a little bit more, but not too much. And this can compensate. Because on the other side, when we go back a little bit in the supply chain, if we see how much it actually costs to produce renewable hydrogen-made steel, that is quite high. But if you move towards the end of the supply chain, that becomes less and less.
So the hardest part is the offtake, basically, right? It just happened with solar panels as well. It was really expensive to build those infrastructures 20 years ago, but now solar and wind is actually very cheap, because they built the infrastructures and now it's very non-risky to actually invest in those energy sectors.
Indeed, I think that is exactly the case. But also there is this little another issue, because indeed with solar and wind this happened. The more it became mainstream, the cheaper it got. And today it's actually quite cheap. But with renewable hydrogen, we also have this one more problem, that electricity price, which is a no-brainer to produce renewable hydrogen, basically, is still very, very high. So we also need to tackle this. It is not only about creating the demand. While electricity price is up to 70%, to 60-70% of the cost of renewable hydrogen. And this is due to because of, let's say, for instance, taxation, how we are still taxing renewable electricity more than we tax gas. Or how, for instance, in several member states, you have, let's say, some irrelevant aspects included in the electricity tax. And we need, so this is more like a holistic way of solving problems. Demand creation is one of them, of course, and which we need to do to speed up the ramp up of the sector. But without solving the electricity price, the taxation, the cost gap will still remain there. Because we are talking about a big cost gap and we need incentives to overcome this, basically.
Let's move to the policy side. The coalition recently released a major declaration called A New Deal for a Stronger Europe. You touched on some of its elements already. But in a nutshell, what is the core message of this declaration?
Well, it is actually, I've already covered a big part of it. So what we are saying basically is that the renewable hydrogen sector, the industry, delivered what it promised in terms of the capacity, in terms of the possibilities, in terms of the innovation, and etc. But now we are expecting the policymakers, and not only European, but also national policymakers, to act from their side as well. To be able to achieve what we already discussed, first, we really need to transpose Renewable Energy Directive. And with that comes the renewable hydrogen rules and RFNBO delegated act, because so far only two member states have transposed it, Ireland and Denmark. And we are already past from the deadline of transposing renewable energy directive. So this is already a huge bottleneck. Without this, as I said, an investor certainty, a demand, or even production itself, because you really don't know what will happen at member states level. It is really, really difficult. What we are also asking is, so Today, we are also talking about our 2040 targets. And for the renewable hydrogen sector to have this future to clarity, this future clarity, we also need to have targets for renewable hydrogen for 2040 and beyond in aviation and shipping and in industry that is hard to electrify. Today, we have these targets for 2030 and et cetera, but we need a longer term visibility. And to be fair, 2040 is not that far when we consider the magnitude of this industry and this production. So we need to really create this. I mean, it's when you look at it, it's just 15 years. So these are the first things that when we think about what do we need, that comes into mind. Other than that, I already discussed about the demand creation and so forth. That we need a public procurement, we need to create quotas, we need to have preferential taxation for green products, basically. I think today is the case with, for instance, the EV cars. Why not making this also for products made with renewable hydrogen? On the other side, we need some more clarity on the rules that what kind of electricity in terms of whether it is supported by the governments, whether it received support by the governments or the EU can be counted. This is still a topic that needs a little bit of clarity from the policy and supply side, but also taxation will play an important role. And this is what we see today is member states are stuck in the discussions because of small little aspects. So we are the taxation and the energy taxation is on hold for years because member states are not able to agree on certain things, which means that there will be higher taxation on renewable electricity and renewable hydrogen because we are unable to agree.
Now that I'm thinking, renewable hydrogen, as you also indicated, requires huge public subsidies, right?
Yes.
How can we guarantee, I'm just thinking, let's just brainstorm, how can we guarantee that public money delivers public value out of this rather than subsidizing private profits and perhaps deepening inequalities between regions and industries?
That's a great question. And that's the fourth ask that we present in our declaration. So maybe it is important to start with saying that as a renewable hydrogen sector, we are not asking to be subsidized forever. Because the goal, the main goal here, what we are trying to achieve is to reduce the cost gap between renewable hydrogen and the fossil alternatives. And by saying that, I also feel the need to mention again and again that even today, we are still subsidizing fossil fuels heavily. It's billions of euros. I don't have the exact number, but the EU presents every year a report on this, but that is already like a part of it. Then there are lots of indirect incentives that goes to fossil fuels. So I think there is this public perception on that renewables receive a lot of public support and et cetera, which is true, of course, but it is not like fossil fuels do not receive. So I wanted to make that clear. But what we need is, and I mentioned already, the European Hydrogen Bank, which was a great tool, and it still is. But unfortunately, it remains insufficient due to its budget. Because currently, I think this year, the third auction was already published. The budget allocated is 1.3 billion, if I'm not wrong. And for renewable hydrogen to close the cost gap, we need around 6 to 8 billion per auction to be able to ramp up and basically allow the demand to also, in a way, ramp up because the cost gap is reduced. So we are a little bit far from what we need in terms of budget.
Again, it's a very complicated topic, so I have to ask. Because I was also in another hydrogen event this year, and what I observed is that there were many participants, but it's a topic that has been discussed among public yet. Like, people are discussing about renewable energy, solar, wind, but when it comes to hydrogen, I don't think many people know a great deal about it. So my question is very simple. Are we going to pay more to energy in our households if we really want to switch to renewable hydrogen in the future?
So we do not believe that we should use renewable hydrogen in households, basically, at homes. That is absolutely not what we are advocating for, that we believe that it is extremely inefficient to actually do so, because we can easily electrify heating or other energy needs at our homes. So
it's just for the huge factories and the industry, not for households.
Indeed, it's for, as I said, aviation, shipping, industries that are hard to electrify. And I mean, to be fair, if we switch to this, and with this current market, these things, like we're talking about shipping or aviation or green steel, let's say, things might become a bit more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it really depends on where do we take the opportunity, or which sectors we focus. Because let's consider, again, on the cars made with green hydrogen and renewable hydrogen, sorry. There was a recent report from Agora, I think, that was putting it forward that a car made with green steel, as we call, will add only 1%, I think, so to the price of the car. So I'm not sure if it's exactly the number. It might be less or more. But the example they were giving, for instance, a car valued at 40,000 euros will add only 1,000 more euros if it is made with green steel. So when you consider this scale, I wouldn't say that this is a huge price to pay. Or, for instance, we are also advocating for more use in sectors that can actually absorb the price. Like today, we are discussing more and more investments in defense sector. This can be an area where renewable hydrogen can be used as a fuel to produce tanks or whatever, or buildings made with green steel, which will probably not really change the price, because we don't really value buildings by the price of their steel, but there are lots of other factors. So I wouldn't really be too worried that it will increase the price for individuals.
Of course, the question is, who's going to pay that little gap? Is it the manufacturer? Is it the government? Or is it the consumer? Like, even though it's just 1,000 euros on a big scale, I guess it still matters for people. With the same discussions go on with the sustainable aviation fuel as well. Like, everyone needs to pay a little bit more when they are buying their plane tickets, just like $10, $8, something like that, to fund, you know, basically help the sustainable aviation fuel production. But again, this is a whole other topic. So my last question to you, because we're already at half an hour almost. If Europe gets this right, what could the renewable hydrogen-powered future look like to you in Europe?
Good question.
So far, you explained everything perfectly, because I didn't know anything about hydrogen. Now I think that I have a decent knowledge. And this is the 21st episode of this podcast. And so far, I tried to avoid the topic of hydrogen, but it came to an end, because obviously at some point I needed to discuss hydrogen with someone. But thanks to you, I think this happened to be a really good introduction, like Hydrogen 101 podcast episode. Yeah, and I also remembered how much I hated math, physics, chemistry, and everything altogether.
Yeah, well, I really liked math, but still, I'm not an engineer, so. But I'm really happy to hear that. Thank you. So for me, the main goal is to get rid of fossil fuels, basically. And how do I see renewable hydrogen fitting is that there are these sectors that I already mentioned that see the difficulty, see the challenge from the producer side, and etc. It is actually a huge change when you think about it. So what we are asking, what the EU is asking these producers, is to change their energy system entirely. And many of these sectors are very traditional in the way of they are being produced, and etc. So we need to adopt this system change mindset and know why we are doing this. We are talking about decarbonization, climate mitigation, and energy security, which are all important, which these things are not the things that we can really put a price on it. So this is where I see renewable hydrogen playing a role. There are certain areas that we cannot put a price on, and we have the opportunity, we have the technology. Although it is expensive, although it is still maturing, that can close this gap. That can power the industry in Europe, that can power sectors like shipping and aviation, and that can reduce emissions, which we see the impact of it every single day as citizens. So that would be probably my answer. I'm not sure if it's what you were looking for.
So where do you hang out mostly in Brussels when you're out? Which district? Châtelain, Plage, I don't know. Where do you hang out?
Where do I hang out? I think I'm too much in the European quarter.
You're fancy.
I'm not sure if that's a good
thing. You're fancy.
I'm not fancy. I'm just here. It's more efficient for me.
Let's say, hypothetically, you saw Ursula von der Leyen drinking and enjoying her coffee in one of the cafes in the European quarter. Mm-hmm. And you just realize that you just have like 1 minute to speak with her about this topic.
Oh, okay.
How would you tell her that this is very urgent and they need to act more fastly and more, let's say, bravely? You have just 1 minute, let's say.
I'll take this opportunity. So if I met Ursula von der Leyen at a cafe, which I don't think so, I would probably say today, as Europe, we have a huge opportunity to keep providing the same living conditions to its residents, to its citizens, and protect our democratic values while keeping our energy independence, our competitiveness, and our innovation and industrial production capacity by just putting proper policies that will support the take-up of electrification and renewable hydrogen. That will be my one sentence.
That is great. She'll probably call the police and say that, who is this girl? I don't want to see her. Well, thank you, Elena. Thank you for joining Everything is Changing. I'm so happy that I hosted you, finally.
And thank you so much. And I told you before we started, I speak. So I hope this is not longer than you anticipated.
Oh my God, yes, you yapped a lot. I'm going to probably have to cut half of this episode, but that's okay. But thank you very much, Elena. Hope to see you in Brussels next month.
In the European quarter.
In the European quarter, exactly.
Yes.
That was my conversation with Elena Okumuş. I appreciated how clearly she explained where renewable hydrogen fits into Europe's climate and energy goals. If you enjoyed this season final, follow Everything is Changing on your favorite podcast app and share the episode with someone who might like it too. Perspective is everything, and everything is changing. See you next season.